Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Hey, welcome to The Creative Spark. Today's guest, actress London Garcia, born Gina Tavazan, has done it all in the entertainment industry. She started out in stand-up comedy, has sung, hosted her own entertainment podcast, and had the pleasure of interviewing over 500 actors and celebrities during red carpet events. More recently, London made the decision to set everything else aside and focus primarily on acting and dive deeper into classes and training. Slowly but surely, things started to gain traction as London would book roles in a number of shows, including 911 Lone Star, Barry, Government Cheese, SWAT. She played the character Emma Isaacs in The Pitt and the character Ruth in NCIS Origins, which won her a Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Imagine Award. Welcome, London.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh my gosh, we have so much to cover. I think we met in Jen Crater's class about 8 years ago or 9 years ago, correct?
I would say at least that, yeah.
It's amazing how time flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good class. It definitely stretched me in my introverted nature. Yeah. Wow. Are you still taking classes even though you're working a lot now? You know what I mean? Just to kind of stay sharp when you aren't working?
I do. I really try to stay in classes as much as I can. I think you have to. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's some actors that if they're busy working a lot, it's almost like their class because they're being directed all the time. But when it's slower, because the industry's been really weird over the last couple of years, you have to really be proactive. And so I'll find different things. I'm in actually two right now, and one is held out of Atlanta, and it's a short term one. It's almost over. And then I actually just started teaching my own online, but I just wanted to create the community. I just was like, gosh, I miss the community. So I just recently started my own, but it's been really, really fun and helps me keep being creative because you can get really stagnant really quick if you're not practicing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I noticed that when I was down there for sure. So when you were a young child, this is your life. No, I'm just kidding.
This is your life.
I read where you often watched reruns of the Carol Burnett Show. And yeah. I heard you once. Yeah, I did too. I loved it. I heard you once say that that was when you learned that being funny was an actual job for some people. And from then on, that is all you wanted to do. Share with us how Carol Burnett gave you permission to pursue acting and comedy.
I loved that show. I love it. I just think it's one of the best shows that ever came on the air. And I love too that she did it. She created and led that show as a woman where it was like a lot tougher because, you know, it was, you know, people would get women got canceled all the time. And so she was like a trailblazer. And we just, as a family, we watched it a lot. I loved how ridiculous she was. And my parents had that same kind of sense of humor. So it didn't feel foreign. It was like, oh, this crazy stuff we do, like, you could do it somewhere and get paid for it. And I didn't, you know, you don't have the concept of thinking of getting, you know, as a little kid of getting paid for it. But I just was like, just realizing that someone did, it was a grown-up doing it. A grown-up can do that. Mm-hmm. And somehow that's their job. And so I was constantly, I wasn't even thinking of like, oh, I'm going to make this my job. I just constantly did that stuff. And so I would create little plays in the back of our house. And I would always be the director because I was super bossy with my friends and my sister and everything. And like, she's bossing us around. And I'm like, get in your place. We got to do this. And so
places
it was
everyone.
Yeah, I was like, this is like little bully director, like, but it was really funny because they'd all get in their places. Nobody asked questions. They just got their places.
That's awesome. I mean, it just looked like they were having so much fun on that show. And I always loved it when they broke character, you know, just couldn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. And, yeah.
I just loved my favorite characters that I just, and I use these for inspiration and ideas now when I need to kind of break out of something, as I think of Went with the Wind when she came down with the curtain rod
Oh, yeah.
down the stairs. Was the funniest thing ever. And then when she played Mrs. Wiggins, where she was real ditzy and just, and instead of a resume, she'd say, here's my resume, like just the silly little things that they said. And so I use those things a lot now for inspiration when I just need to break out of like maybe my funk when I'm working on an audition. And it's just so funny. But my dad had, when they first, this totally dates me, but when we first started to get like camcorders and all that, it was like the most exciting thing because it's like, whoa, you can film your own movies. And my dad was so excited about having a camcorder. And so I would do makeup commercials. I grab whatever around the house and my dad would get the camcorder and I would just go off the cuff. So I was constantly as a little kid improvising, and I'd find some old wig my mom had, which I don't even know why she had wigs, but I'm like, here, let me throw this on, and some old crazy dress. And I don't know why I always wanted to be an old lady in commercials, and that's constantly what I did. And my dad would film them.
Let's talk about your family. So your father was an optician and artist, as well as a Mexican immigrant, and your mother was a Southern California native of British descent. What was that like, creatively, as well as growing up in multiple cultures?
When you're growing up in that, you don't think of it. You don't think of like, oh, this is different. It's just your normal thing.
Sure.
And so it wasn't like, gosh, I feel split. It's just kind of like you grow up how you grow up. Like, as normal as it is for someone to grow up in all one culture or all one race, it was normal for me to constantly be around both a white and Mexican family. And we went to Mexico a lot as a kid. And my mom, being raised in Southern California, really, she got used to so many like Mexican type of things. My dad was a chef when he did a lot of things when he first came over. But one of the things is he was a chef. And he was very creative in everything, cooking, painting, like everything. And he taught her how to cook the greatest Mexican dishes. And so they both would cook Mexican meals all the time. Like, that was just a normal thing. And we had a very multicultural neighborhood. So I was in Bellflower, and it was like in our neighborhood, there were a lot of Mexican people, like kind of a lot of everybody. And so we were just used to it. And so it wasn't weird. I mean, the Mexican and the white family got along great. They loved hanging out together. So that was cool.
Well, I think that's, I mean, in a lot of ways you're lucky, you know what I mean? To have experienced multiple cultures and I think that's so important nowadays. And that's why I think, you know, traveling is so wonderful to do, because we do realize it's not just about us and living the way that we live and
whatnot. Yep.
So nice. So when you, now, obviously, I know you were inspired early on and you did all kinds of stuff on your own. When did you kind of take that leap and maybe start doing some of the stand up and the sketch stuff with other people?
That's really interesting, because I didn't have the confidence to try to do it when I was younger. Believe it or not, I was very nervous about it. And kind of insecure at certain points going through school. Like, I was always kind of, like, I wasn't like the popular girl as far as like the quote unquote cheerleader type, but I got along with everybody. But, so I would hang out with cheerleaders, punk rockers, you know, every race. I was the girl that hung out with everybody, but I was always kind of goofy, class clown or anything, but I didn't have the confidence to really go for it. So there are a lot of things that I would try out for in high school, and I didn't make it. Not, you're going to love this. No, everything I tried out for in theater in high school, I never got.
Wow.
Not a single thing. Like, I never made it.
But you kept going.
But it was so funny because I'm the only one that's actually in entertainment now.
Right? And probably one of the only ones that did what you did growing up. I mean,
yeah, so it's really funny. But I didn't, I kind of was going along with things that I liked when I first got out of high school. I went to cosmetology school and I liked it, but I really did love doing hair and makeup, but I down deep, it was like the big dream was being an actor. Mm-hmm. And what happened was in 89, well, my dad had a terminal illness for a long time. So he was suffering from a few things for years, but he was like, you know, just, he was such a hard worker. So it never stopped him. Even being very, very sick, he would still work like these 12, 14 hour days minimum. Like he just went, and he shouldn't have, but he did. Like he just was working really hard. But in 89, my dad passed away. And I remember I had this weird, like you kind of are in a fog after that, but then you kind of, you, it really hits you that like, when you're gone, you're gone. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is like a one-way ticket. Like, this is your one chance. So I just started to go for it. I was like, you know what? Like, we're not around here forever. Like, what am I afraid of? And it was that event that made me go, I need to just go for it. And I just started exploring things. And it was very different than in the early 90s. Like, you know, there was no like internet and email and apps and social and all this other stuff. Like I had to go drive to get a newspaper every week from Hollywood to see if there were any auditions. And then I would have to mail the headshots through the mail. And it was a lot more work to do it, but I mean, we didn't know any different. It wasn't like, wow, I wish I had a phone with an app. Like you didn't know that was going to exist. So you just did it. You just, whatever you had to do. And so I would hope that there was just maybe one or two auditions I could submit for every week, just a week. Wow. And so it was really different. But the biggest thing is I showed up. Like people, I noticed in the industry, especially like now, but even then, how people are waiting for, if this thing comes along, I've never once in my entire life waited for, quote unquote, that thing to come along. Mm-hmm. Like I just went exploring. I'm big time an explorer and curious. And so I just was like, this thing may be a waste of time, but I'm going to show up anyway. And so I showed up to everything. And I made friends everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in touch. Like people always say like, we'll stay in touch, you know, let's do lunch, which they never do. And so, you know what I mean? Like it's such an LA thing. Let's do lunch. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. But, you live a mile away, but it takes 2 hours to get there. Sorry.
Yeah. It just, people say a lot of things and they don't stay in touch. But I do stay in touch. So I followed up with all those people I'm friends with. A lot of them, you know, so a lot of them got out of the industry, but there's a few people that we've been friends for over 30 years because we meant what we said.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of them are super successful and that's all I did. I mean, there's no magic really. It's just show up and stay in touch.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. I mean, just being a good person, you know, and just connecting and just keep showing up.
That's really the biggest thing is just showing up.
Yeah. So then how did that apply to you getting into stand up and maybe I know that you worked with a group of other comedians and you did some stuff together.
That was all through the stuff that I would find in that newspaper. So there used to be a newspaper that came out called Dramalog. Did you ever hear about that?
No, I didn't get to know it until 2013.
Okay. So it was, I'm sure, long gone by then, but it was just a little newspaper that they had, but it was like kind of like the Bible, like everybody got it. So I think it came out every Sunday, but every week I would drive around every newsstand I could find in Hollywood until I could find a copy because they would sell out really fast. So it was like where you, if you didn't have an agent, and I didn't have an agent for years, I got all my own gigs. Mm-hmm. For so many years, I got my own gigs. Just, you know, I didn't even think of the difference between non-union and union. I mean, I was just,
It's going to work.
I was just green and I just was trying to get stuff. And so I would look in, I'd go through the drama log and I found an audition for this sketch comedy group. And that was the one where I met, they weren't necessarily comedians, like stand-up comedians. They were more comedy actors. It's kind of like, you know, there's so many different types of comedy performers, like there's stand-up, sketch comedy, multicam actors, like, you know, there's so many different types. And sketch comedy for me was like, that was the Carol Burnett stuff. That's what they did. And so it was like, oh, this is gold. I loved it. And the writing was excellent. It was so great and so funny. And through, I can't remember if it was before that or after, but I just kept exploring things that I'd hear about amateur night doing comedy. And so I was like, well, let me learn how to write comedy. And I don't even remember how I did. I think I just watched a ton of stand-up comedy specials, like, you know, way back then, you know, it would be things like on VHS and everything. I know this all sounds so old. And but I'd look for all the comedy specials with Bob Nelson was one. It's so funny because he was a big comedian back in the day. And what's so funny is he follows me now on social media.
Oh,
And
that's
I'm
awesome.
like, that's so strange. It's so wild. But Paul Rodriguez was really big back then. And Pauly Shore was doing his thing. I'm trying to think. Oh, Andrew Dice Clay and all these people from then. I, you know, I would look at old Richard Pryor stuff. Sam
Eddie.
Kinison was really big.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I would watch all these people and I kind of learned just by watching all those specials and I'd write my own stuff and just start, I just started searching where are they doing comedy and I would just show up.
Wow. That's really awesome. That's a big step out of the comfort zone.
It is, and it was scary. It was very scary because stand-up comedy, like if you don't get a response while you're up there, like you could do theater and not get a response and you can tell yourself you're doing great because you can say, oh, it's a deep, intense moment. That's what they're taking it in. But in comedy, if you don't get a response, you're like, oh, I just sucked right now. Like you don't know. And so it was very scary to start out with. And it scared me to death for the longest time, but I was like, I gotta keep doing this thing until it doesn't scare me anymore. It took before I would say for the first like 7 years that I did stand up, and I wasn't doing it like several times a week. It was like sometimes once a week. Like it was wasn't all the time, but it was enough. And I would say for about the first 7 years, I just thought I was gonna throw up and pass out every time before I
Oh
went
my
up on
gosh.
stage. And it wasn't until maybe around the 7th year that I did this huge crowd in at a hotel. Someone gave me this opportunity, and it was just me. It was like headlining this whole thing, and it was a huge thing. Yeah, it was crazy. And there had to be at least 1,000 people in the audience. Like there was a lot. And it was the very first time that I didn't feel like I was going to pass out. And that was the biggest moment for me because I was like, wait, I can do this and I'll be fine.
That's amazing. What kept you going back? Was it just a knowing that you were like down the road, it was your destiny to maybe kind of do something bigger, or you know what I mean? What
Yeah.
kept you going? Because most people call it in after the first 6 months or something.
It is 100% your mindset because if you don't feel like you're meant to do something, if you don't feel like it's your destiny, I notice people put a deadline. So for over 30 years, I've watched people come into Hollywood and like, I'll give this thing a couple years or 5 years. And I'm so blunt now. I'm like, you may as well go home now because this industry is crazy. Like you can't predict anything. And so it wasn't even a thing of, it's hard to explain to people because I think they think like, when it's so hard, wouldn't you want to give up? And I'm like, I think, I hate to compare it to this, but it's like if I don't have kids, but if someone has kids, of course you're going to go through hard times with your kids, but you don't go, you know, I'm going to give this thing 5 years and then I'm going to return them, you know?
If it
And I
doesn't
know
stop
that's,
wetting the bed, it's done. Get out of
yeah, you're
here.
like, you've cried 5 times too much, you got to go. So, like, I know it's not the same thing as being a parent, but for me, it was that kind of destiny where I just was like, I'm here. I signed up for this, but also I truly believe since I was a little kid, this is where I'm meant to be. I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know. I believed big things were going to happen, but I was like, I don't know when or how, or I didn't have to know the when or the how. And I think of all those great, like scholars and poets that say these quotes of like, you don't have to see the whole staircase, just take one step ahead of you.
Sure.
And I realized since I was young, that's what I was doing. But it wasn't, I never, there was never a deadline. It wasn't like, well, if this doesn't happen and whatever. So I knew, well, if I don't know how this is going to happen or when or how big or anything, I better be prepared just to take care of myself in the long run. So I knew and accepted that I would have to have some other job or whatever. People have side hustles, jobs, whatever. So I knew I was going to have kind of a parallel career to survive for the long run, but I fully accepted it and it didn't bother me. When
See,
people are like, I just want to be an actor and I don't want to do anything extra. I hear that all the time and it's like, I was okay with it.
well, I think that's so. I applaud you because that's so rare to not, I don't want to say put a time limit on it, but just be as, I don't know, just you kept showing up. I mean, you even took like a 9-year break, I read. And I mean, that to me, I mean, did you ever think you'd get back to it, or do you just kind of just, I don't know.
Yeah, that was wild because I kind of slowly got out of the industry because I was having such a hard time just surviving, and I was like, okay, I have got to be able to like pay my bills. And I was like, I don't want to be like a broke artist. When people say they think it's noble to be a starving artist, and that is not a good look on me. Like, I just can't do it. Like they'll think it's like they want to tell that story. I like telling the story that I lived well while I was pursuing this. Like I don't need to be a martyr for anyone. And so I'm like, no, I need to live okay. And so I started this small telecom company out of state, and it was something I had experience in. And so I'm like, I'm just going to do this thing. And I kind of went on this other exploring adventure. But the craziest thing is, so I was out of California for about 3 years. But I constantly, it was so weird. This is where I so believe in destiny. And when it's so weird when you feel like the universe is kind of pulling you back to something, because I constantly ran into people who had some tie to the entertainment industry, and I would be nowhere near Hollywood. Like all of a sudden, someone would be like, oh, I heard you did a little something and this and that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I would play it off, and I didn't want to talk about it much. And then all of a sudden, I would be having drinks with a couple people through telecom, and to be like, oh yeah, this guy was one of Burt Reynolds' business partners, and they're thinking about doing. And I'm thinking, I'm not even here for entertainment, and they start talking about a film, and
Yeah,
that kind of
getting those
stuff kept
nudges.
happening. Is that
Nudges.
wild?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you needed to maybe be just, I don't know, pointed in that direction again, obviously.
I did, and I really down deep, it was like, I thought maybe I'd try to get into producing. Maybe I'll go back in that way. And I started thinking of all these different things. And my business partner and I had our, we had changed a lot and our goals changed. And so we went in different directions with our business. And it was so tough building that business. Like we had some success, but it was so hard. And I was like, wait, if it's going to be hard doing something that I'm not in love with, I may as well do what I really love and have it be hard there. Like, and so it didn't happen overnight. There were so many different things that happened, but I just constantly, people kept coming in, crossing my path with that. And then finally, I'm like, well, that's when I got into radio. I'm like, let me do something fun. And it wasn't my dream, but I was like, I'm going to do something fun. And that's when, it's so funny when you said I had my own podcast, it actually was radio when I did it. It was just good old fashioned radio, and I did it like a talk show, and it was a blast. And just my manager reached out to me. Like it was so crazy. These things I wasn't really chasing after them. I think if you're doing something that you really love and you're having fun, it's wild how many things just start to pop up in front of you. Because my old manager from the 90s, we stayed in touch, and he was like, honey, you need to just start going out again on auditions. And I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, just send me some pictures. I'm sending you out. Like, I wasn't chasing after it. He just kind of was like, you need to go out. And I said, okay, that sounds good.
Well, you know what is meant for us, I think, happens. You know what I mean? And sometimes we try too hard. Sometimes we get sidetracked or whatever. But I mean, one thing leads to another, and we just get pointed back for whatever reason or for however. I don't know. You know, that's what it's like for you, at least.
That has happened my entire life. It is wild, but I stayed open. It wasn't in my mind. I wasn't like, oh, I'll never do that because I loved it too much. But I was like, oh, I just don't want things to be so hard. Like, I was like, it was so hard in the 90s, like pursuing it. And I was like, I don't want to think like, can I buy groceries this week? Like, I just was sick of it being so hard. And just things changed and evolved, and I learned, and you just learn how to do things a better way and smarter. And
more
I just kept trying to get better with everything, more confident. And it just, none of it happens overnight. All these things that I grew in took such a long time.
Yeah, I know. You know, for me, and I was really green when I moved there, and it blew me away when I started taking classes and I recognized people from stuff I'd seen. And it's like, that was terrifying. Because I hadn't really acted up to that point, other than just a short film I did that was kind of pointed me in that direction. But I know for me initially, I think everybody should take an acting class. I learned so much just by doing that and going on auditions and just the whole process. And at least for me, and I know a lot of other people too, but I mean, maybe not for you, since you maybe initially, but where you go in there and you're in your head so much and you try so hard to do it a certain way and you're not yourself. And that's ultimately what we need to be. And that's such a metaphor for life.
Yeah. It's right that, no, I mean, it's one of those things where no matter how long someone does it, at some point, like, you can get in your head. I mean, I just think that's human. I heard in an interview recently, Kathy Bates does still. And it made me feel better, because I'm like, if she can still go out there and kill it and has those little battles, I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, those things always inspire me, where she's like, sometimes she'll get in there like, ooh, can I do this the right way? And I'm like, Kathy Bates, like, you really wonder about that? But it, you know, it's so crazy. But I think you're right. It's really cool if someone gets into a good acting class, because they vary. Some are not that great.
Yes.
But if you get into a good acting class and you see what people go through to try to, you know, get a real honest result. I would say I don't like to say good or bad, because that's so subjective. But, you know, just acting is about getting to the truth. And so if they can get, you know, just a really honest result that's authentic, you see what someone goes through to get that. And I mean, I think it's true, because then people can understand that what they see on TV and film is so much more than just like, boom, boom, there you go. Like, there's so much work, and it's such a journey to get there.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think, well, a lot of people just end up kind of playing themselves over and over and over. I mean, not, you know, not everybody, but like,
there's a lot of that for sure.
Yeah. But we, inside of each of us, we have all kinds of different, there's so many parts to us, and it's just a matter of tapping into that authentic part of ourself, and right. And then just kind of connecting with your partner.
Yeah.
Acting made me a much better listener.
Yeah, no, it really, if someone is really paying attention and really trying to absorb what's going on, I think it really can make you a better listener for sure. Because of course we're in a world where nobody listens to anyone.
What'd you say?
That we're in a world
where y'all, right?
Yeah. I'm gonna let me see. You got me on that one. That's so funny. But you know what's funny, when you said about that, about everyone taking an acting class, I have a friend who, we've been friends for years and years, and he's not an actor. He's a very techie guy. He's great with technology, but he's also a photographer, and he has performed, you know, like, he used to perform as a singer many years ago and stuff, but he's mostly like a behind the scenes guy. And he took acting classes for years. And I remember thinking, like, why does he do that? And he just said, it's just cathartic. That's the only reason why he did it.
Looking back, I don't know if I ever, I think for me, it was just for me to learn and grow, the acting. I mean, I was trying to do a lot of stuff and, but I just,
Yeah.
it just, it got me out of my shell. It made me a better listener. It gave me more confidence. It just, I don't know. It did so much for me personally.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that. Yeah. I want to talk about your role as Ruth in NCIS Origins earlier this year. Now, this was kind of an unusual situation, and I want you to share with us,
Very.
yeah, what made that role unusual and special, and maybe what it's done for you personally.
That was the most surprising, unexpected thing I've ever experienced. And in a million years, you could have never told me that was going to happen. Like, because it's just one of those, when people will think like their big break, they think of stuff like that. I think you get a million different little breaks, and all of a sudden, if you're lucky, you could have a big career. And I don't think there's any one big break. It's this whole long journey. But this was such a big thing, and it was so shocking. So I did a guest star on one episode. It was episode 7, called One Flew Over, of that first season. And after I did that, it was one scene. It was one quick scene with Gibbs, and they called. What I found out later is that the showrunners had a conversation with Mark Harmon, and they said, "We're thinking about doing this. Like, what if we create this relationship between Ruth and Gibbs, blah, blah, blah." Of course, I found that out way later. And but they called my agent the next day and said, "We're thinking about bringing her back," which I was in shock, and I'm like, "For what? I'm just like the landlord, you know?" So I was like, "That's so weird." But of course, I don't say that to them. I'm like, "Okay, that sounds good." But inside, I'm like, "Wow, what are they going to do? That's so weird, you know? Do I couldn't picture what I was going to do with them as a landlord. I'm like, what, do I evict them or whatever? Like, I have no idea." And I didn't hear anything for a couple of weeks. They just kept saying, "Just keep, make sure you're available. Just make sure you're available." And then a couple of weeks later, they sent the script and an offer to my agent, my manager, and all of a sudden, I go through the script. I took it, of course, like I'm not going to say no. And I go through the whole script and I'm like, I'm in everything. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, I'm in almost every scene through the very, and I'm like, wait, because they said, oh, she'll have a heavier presence. And I was like, that's an understatement. And so I realized I was in the entire episode. What happened was they just decided they wanted to fill in a gap of that story with Gibbs and, there's a whole long story about that, but in the history of Gibbs, there was a gap that they felt wasn't answered. And so they wanted to fill that in, and they used my character to do that. And it was just amazing because they believed I could do it. And I was like, okay, that's just wild. And so I ended up being in that whole episode. And one of the showrunners came up to me after the table read before we shot it, and he said, "I just want you to know that this is the first episode in the entire NCIS franchise that's not about a case." He said, "They've never done an episode that's not about a case. This is
No
the first one."
pressure.
Yeah. And so it was wild because it was like, also kind of a historic episode because they called it a crimeless episode. So nobody was solving a case in that one. And so what I love is that I'm always going to be able to have that. Like, I'm always going to have that thing where it's like, oh, I got to be, to I got to kind of lead or lead co-lead, whatever you want to call it, their very first crimeless episode in that franchise. And so it was just this huge thing. And then the episode came out and did really well. And before they air it, they sent it out to all the media and press to look at it like a week before. And then I got calls saying like, yeah, the media is really loving this episode. And I'm like, wow. And then my manager calls me and says, "Deadline wants to interview you." And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I have these dreams. I had these dreams of like, one day I want to be interviewed by Deadline. And I would go, you're going to love this. I would go onto the Deadline website and I would search my name, knowing I wouldn't come up. I knew there was no articles about me. So I would type in the search bar, London Garcia, and I knew nothing was going to come up. But I was like, one day I'm going to search that and it's going to come up. And I would search it, imagining my name coming up. And all of a sudden they said, oh yeah, they want to interview. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I did that interview the next day, and she had that ready to release right after the episode aired. But I remember when it came out, I went back to the Deadline website and typed in my name, and I'm like,
That's
there I
what a wonderful manifestation.
am. It was really wild. Like, I've done a million things like that in my life. Like, well, Carol Burnett, I said, one day I'm going to interview her. And then 2013, I got to interview her on the red carpet, and I'm like, oh my God, my hero.
Oh my gosh. What was it like watching that episode? Were you just kind of sitting there like with tears or pinching yourself?
I did, and I got together with a bunch of people to watch it, and it was really cool because I thought I just want to watch this with people who I feel close to, who I really feel like have my back and everything. And so I felt very supported as we're watching it, and I just was very nervous. So I didn't really have tears yet, but I just was super nervous. And I was curious what they thought of it, and it was cool because they loved it and everything. But I just remember going like, this is the craziest thing. And for the longest time, it was until the season finale, it was the highest rated episode of the season. And then they had a really great season finale, and so that one killed it. And
Damn it.
which was cool. I'm like, you know what, this there is the glory has to be shared by everyone, so I don't need to be stingy about that.
Well, I saw that it was named as one of TV Insider's 24 best TV episodes of 2024. Oh,
Yeah,
man.
like stuff like that kept coming out. Like, I was like, this is the most insane thing. And then what was it? I can't remember if it was TV Line. I can't remember which one did an honorable mention of like best quotes or something like that. And so it came out in articles like that, stuff like that, like that were kind of gave me a good list of things from that episode, which was very cool. But then, of course, a lot of other stuff started to come after that too.
Well, has it led to some other auditions and such?
Yes. The
You've been
interesting
working a
thing
lot in the last couple of
is,
years.
yeah, but you know what's interesting? This year has actually been really slow for me because it's been slow in the industry. So it's not a me thing. Like, people personalize it so much. It's like, no, the industry is really undergoing crazy transformations, and I've been used to that since the 90s. It's up and down and up and down, and like, you can't take it personal. And of course, you think you're going to get all this massive stuff right after, but I mean, it's like the industry got so slow. I did work one job right after, which was cool. I got offered a small thing in the second season of The Last Thing He Told Me, and that's an Apple series with Jennifer Garner. And I worked in a couple of episodes in the first season, and then they called me back for the same character. So I got to do that, which was really fun.
Nice.
And so I've had some, a few really good auditions, but like, it's less now only because they are, kind of bigger roles, like guest star recurring, that kind of thing. And so you get a lot more auditions when it's a bunch of co-star roles, and I don't mind. Those are fun. But when it's the bigger stuff, it's not going to be as many.
Sure.
And so I've had some really good ones, and there was one
Yeah.
that I was pinned for a long time that I really wanted, and I didn't get it, but I know I was one of the final like two or three. And so those are also, it's like a nod because they did choose you, but they can only end up choosing. And
Yes.
so there's been that. But so it is what it is. The industry is really slow right now, but as far as work, it's just kind of been slow for everyone. But there's some stuff that's picking up more right now and a little bit more happening.
Good.
But during that whole time is when all the stuff was going on for campaigning for awards and stuff.
What was that like? The being nominated for the Imagine Award and winning.
Well, it's so something that I had to learn, like, is it's actually pronounced Imahen.
Oh, whoops. Okay.
But a lot of people don't know that. So it's,
Myself
trust me,
included.
I made the same mistake, so it was like shame on me. But yeah, no, it's you know, because it's Latin, it's a Latin award, and so they pronounce it Imahen, and they call it Imagine or Imogen. I've heard all kinds of different stuff, but I was before that I was campaigning for an Emmy nomination, and I got a lot of great support and everything, but they kind of, you know, I found out later that historically they kind of give the guest star nominations to big celebrity names. And so, you know, I was kind of like the little guy out there trying to campaign. And but I got, you know, I got a lot of great feedback. And even the reporter that interviewed me for Deadline even messaged me, and she's like, "I'm so loving this. This is so great." Like, she's super supportive. Like, she's become a really great supporter. And so I was really like, I thought, nope, I'm gonna hope, because this could happen. And so I was really, really hoping for an Emmy nomination, but I knew that, you know, there were all these huge names up for it. So when they announced the nominations, I didn't get it. And I was like, okay, you know, it is what it is, but I gave it my all. Like, I really gave it my all with, I was like the little engine that could, because I didn't have like a big press team behind me or anything. But then 2 days after they announced the Emmy nominations, they announced the nominations for the Imahen Awards. And when I saw that I got a nomination, I literally, that one, I cried. Like, I just, all of a sudden it hit me. And that felt, it really felt like an Emmy nomination, because the criteria for getting a nomination and winning with Imahen, believe it or not, is much harder than Emmy. Like, Emmy kind of, people have to watch and like it and everything, but it almost feels like a popularity contest, and they kind of get behind the biggest shows. Like, they're promoting White Lotus and they're promoting Severance and all that stuff. And that's great. I don't, I mean, I'm fine with all that. But they kind of get behind the shows they want to get behind and promote the heck out of them. And of course, those people have huge budgets and they can put on all these events and everything. But the Imahen Awards, I was so proud of that, because it, like, it was not, it could have been like a popularity contest, but they had this, and I saw myself, this long scorecard. Like, they would watch the work, the project, and they'd go through this scorecard of like production quality. How did it represent this? All this different stuff. So the criteria that so many people don't know is so much harder. So I was like, man, if that's all I get is a nomination, I'm good. Like, I'm happy. And I called my manager and I started crying. I called my mom and I started crying. And we are like, this is amazing. I was like, no matter what happens, I'll always have this nomination. No one can take it away from me or anything. So to actually win was like mind blowing, because I was up against, what is it? I think her name is Adria Arjona. I'm trying to remember. She's in Andor, and I think she was like, she's got a huge following. So I think a lot of people thought she probably would win, because she had this huge team and a huge following and all this stuff. And then, you know, FBI and Law and Order SVU, like all these, you know, there were these great people in this category. So I was like, yeah, don't get your hopes up too much. But when they announced my name, I just like, oh my God, I can't feel my legs.
Well, this
It
will
just blew my mind.
well deserved. Does we're gonna take a little sidetrack here. Does other people's opinions of your work and art affect you?
Not too much, no.
Okay.
Because I know that, I mean, I'm human, so it's not that I don't feel anything, but I just, I'm like, if they like me, they like me. If they don't, they don't. Like, I have to like the work myself. So, you know, I just look at, like, did I do my best in that? Like, I just am looking at what I, like, I know what I invested in it. And so, I mean, if someone doesn't like it or doesn't like me, I'm like, that's their right. They don't have to. And it doesn't hold me back. I don't cry about it. I don't lose sleep. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to be everybody's taste. I don't care. But If it's because I did something horrible, like if I did something to hurt someone, that's a different thing. But if it's because they don't like maybe my personality or my work or whatever, I'm like, well, it is what it is. I'm not sorry for that at all. So most of the time, I mean, honestly, just most of the time, I don't care.
Well, I mean, that's good. I think just from our discussion today, your attitude has been just about as good as it could be for what you've done, and the endurance that you've showed, and just trusting the process ultimately. And I think that probably just kind of fits right in line with all of that as well.
Well, commitment's a huge thing. I mean, just being
Yeah, it's everything.
committed to, I just, when I got back into the industry after that hiatus, and I really decided, I'm like, no, because probably about 10 years ago, and I said, I'm going to set everything aside, red carpet, all this other stuff, because it was taking so much time and energy and no money. And I was like, okay, this is, I built a body of work. I was happy with that. But I was like, I'm done. It wasn't a dream, so I didn't care. I could have been done at any time. But I just wanted, I was like, I just want to be like a great actor that works in a lot of stuff. And I just made this commitment. I was like, I'm going to do this. And I know it's going to sound so crazy, but I was like, I'm going to do this until my last breath. And so I would make these jokes, and I said it even recently. I always say, oh, I'm going to Betty White this thing. Like, I'm going to do this till I'm 99 or 100. And so they're probably going to find me on some set, holding an oxygen tank, trying to like do, like ready to keel over. But I'm like, but at least I know that I didn't sell out on myself and that I'm doing what I love. And so I was like, whether it's big or little, I was like, I'm gonna Betty White this thing until the wheels fall off.
Oh, I love that. Well, I saw we're on social media together. I saw a post a little while back on your page that said, "Don't call me lucky. I failed more times than you tried."
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
And that, I mean, that just that's everything. I mean, I kind of feel
Yeah.
a kindred spirit with you in regards to kind of what I want to do. And it's been my life's mission too, in a different way. And
Yeah.
it's just what we do and what we have to do.
They don't see all the stuff you went through, like, and they, you get the people who want the magic wand. How did you make it? Whatever. And I'm like, how do I encapsulate 30 plus years in 2 minutes?
Is no
Like,
overnight success.
it's in impossible. And the things that I put up with, which wasn't bad. I mean, a lot of stuff, like, I'm not sad about it. Like, I love the stories. Like, they're funny to me. And some of the, I mean, even the hard times are just, some of the stuff is hilarious to me. And I just know that most people are not willing to go through all that to get what they see now. So what they see now is they're like, that's amazing, whatever. And it is, and I love it, and I'm grateful. And I know, just so you know, Brian, like, I don't think I'm entitled to any of it. I don't think anybody had to hand me anything. I could have been still trying to get one little co-star right now. I don't think anybody had to hand me anything. I've never been that girl. I grew up in a very like blue collar family where it's like, no, you work like a freaking dog and for what you get. And just work, like work your guts out, like just do it. And I saw it in my parents. And so it was never like anything handed to you. I never witnessed that in my life. And so I'm like, that's fine. Okay, go, sweat it out until you keel over, whatever. And so I wasn't afraid of that. I was like, that's fine. That's fine. I can do that. And I just know so many people are not willing to do that, but they want all the stuff right now. They like, that's amazing. I'm like, it is, but if you only knew, like, it would have been amazing if this stuff happened in my 20s, but I couldn't view it the way that I do now because it just everything, even the most simple moments are so much richer that would not have felt that way back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's life. I mean, life is all about learning, and we're learning and growing along the entire road that we're, journeying on it, and everything's an
And I
experience.
think it, we don't, I think if you stop learning or being willing to learn, I really think is the moment you start dying.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I want to be like, if I live to be like 95 or something, I want to still feel like I'm learning all the time.
Oh, I'm the same way. We are kind of winding down here. I want to ask you one final question. Looking back, if you could share some advice with your 20-year-old self, what would you say?
Wow, that's such a loaded question.
Okay.
I would have. That's so interesting. I have thought about this stuff, but I would have said no to a lot more people. I would have let go of a lot more people who were like just energy vampires, I guess I would call them. And I would have said yes to a lot of things that scared me. Because I just, there were things where it's like, no, I can't do that. I'm too scared. And you're afraid of maybe what is someone going to think? Even if you think of like, okay, is my mom going to think I'm crazy, whatever? Because, of course I want, my mom to be proud of me and happy with me. And, or, I would have chosen to give like my energy, my life, and my heart to some different people, but I was like trying not to hurt people or, oh no, I think, like the pity friendships where it's like, no, I know they're going through a hard time, but it's sometimes it's people who kind of are creating chaos or negativity in their life, and you're trying to help when you realize they really have to kind of work it out themselves. And so yeah, I would have probably selected some different people to give my energy to, which that's everything. Who you surround yourself with, it has everything to do with where you go in life. And I've selected some really great people, but I probably would have tried to please less people.
I like that. I can resonate with that.
Yeah. And I think you can learn to do that in a graceful way. And I think
Boundaries.
you can wish them well. Yeah, boundaries is a huge thing. I got so much better with boundaries. I wish I would have been so much better at it in my 20s. It just would have changed so many different things. But I don't. I'm not sad about any of it. I learned from all of it, and I think what happens happens, and you can't be sad about it. And you can't be regretting it all the time, but instead learn from it. So I would have done that. Have you ever heard of that book, the Top 5 Regrets of the Dying? It's
I
something
have
like that.
not. I have not.
Oh, amazing.
I'm
And
sure
they
it's
talk
good.
about, yeah, just it's just, it's this simple stuff where they say like if they were to do it all over again, what do they regret? And things are like trying to please everybody, not doing what they really love, like the simple stuff.
Well, I'm certainly impressed with your journey and just your belief in yourself and the trust in the process and your mission and all the steps out of your comfort zone that you took. And I mean, yeah, you're not many people do that. And so I applaud you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm going to put all your links in the show notes. I know it's LondonGarcia.com, but I'll put all that stuff in the show notes. And I appreciate you, and it's nice to catch up and
Thank
celebrate
you.
what you're doing. It's just so fun to see you on the little screen.
Thank you so much. It's fun to do it. I mean, it was a dream. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, I'm actually doing that thing.
Well, it's yeah, I think a lot of people can just learn from your stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, I think the only thing I've mastered is how to not quit.
And that's it. And I applaud you. Well, you have a lovely day, and until next time, you take care, London.
You so much.
You're
No,
welcome.
this is great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson and all that is going on in his Creative Spark world, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.